This is a podcast from ABC Local Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. It's time for our talking point this morning with a simple question to begin with, and that is, how old were you when you were first introduced to alcohol? Was it your parents who gave you your first drink? Was it a friend? Was it around the dinner table with your family? Or was it on a school camp, maybe, and somebody had smuggled in a beer? What do you believe? What do you think? Could you believe that this was what people had been making such a fuss about for so long? It tasted terrible. Or maybe it tasted great. The latest figures show a huge drop in the number of people getting alcohol from their parents in the last decade. It's dropped by 50%. But the young people are still drinking despite that overall decline. We're talking about alcohol this morning. But before we do that, before we get to our guest on the program, Julia Stafford, Executive Officer at the McCusker Centre for Action on Alcohol and Youth at Curtin University, we sent Emily Contador-Kelsall from overnight to the streets of Australia to find out what people have to say about when they had their first drink and what their thoughts are about Australia's drinking culture.
I started drinking when I was 15. I think excessive drinking is probably more than 4 drinks a day. On a normal week, I would drink probably 20 or 30 drinks every week. I definitely think drinking a lot is a big part of our culture.
It's just that alcohol does change a lot of people's way of thinking and acting. I find that alcohol causes a lot of that.
I was probably 13 when I had my first drink. I definitely say I drink too much, 100%. Mostly peer pressure makes it so that everyone underage drinks.
But I see all my friends saying, oh, are you drinking? I'm like, I don't drink at all. I say, what? And I felt weird. Like, when people think you're not drinking and they think it's weird, it's just abnormal. And they were trying to make you drink. Yeah, they will.
So since I came to Australia, I've been drinking a bit more because it's good to connect with people, right? It's good for socializing, I think. So that's why I drink at home also, as well as outside.
It has probably the same problem that a lot of Anglo-Saxon countries do. They seem to like to get really smashed all the time.
I really do think that Australia have a problem with drinking, yeah. Like, it's like the only one thing that everyone does here, and they do it so commonly and excessively all the time. Excessive drinking is actually depending on alcohol every day to actually forget about the miserable day that you had.
We have a few like drinks every weekend. It's hard because everyone's 21st, always on, and then like you're kind of obliged to drink because everyone around you is drinking. Just whenever I go out with my friends, people would have pre-drinks. We'd pre-drink and then we'd go out to like a pub or a club, continue drinking there.
If I go out on a Friday or Saturday night, I'll drink, but that's most weekends. I think massive binge drinking problem in the younger society, and as they tend to get older, I think that starts to lay on to an every night thing.
Well, that was a report from Emily Contador-Kelsall. Well, how has alcohol affected your life? Or more importantly, how old were you when you got your first drink? Or more importantly than that, perhaps, if you're a parent, how did that affect how your own children dealt with alcohol, maybe for the first time? Did you introduce it to them? Did you tell them, I do not want you to take a drink until you're 21? There used to be such a thing called the pledge, that you took the pledge. Joseph Kennedy, Jack Kennedy's father, the patriarch of the Kennedy clan, he gave his children $1 million on their 21st birthday if they did not have a drink. How about that? That's pretty amazing. Julia Stafford is Executive Officer of the McCusker Centre for Action on Alcohol and Youth at Curtin University. Julia, a very good morning to you. Thank you very much for getting up so early, especially in WA.
Hi, Rod. Good to be with you.
Thank you. Is it a huge problem in Australia, do you think, youth drinking?
Yes, it certainly is. We see too many young people drinking too much, too often. We have seen some encouraging trends in the last few years coming out of some of our national surveys, which show that fewer young people in particular are drinking, and they're drinking less often. But on the other hand, we're still seeing huge amount of harm from alcohol and preventable harm. So we still have a big problem to address.
How do we address that then?
Well, we actually have a lot of really good evidence about what works to prevent harm from alcohol. We need a comprehensive approach. There's no one silver bullet that is going to solve this problem, but it's going to take action in a whole range of areas, like reforming alcohol taxation, putting proper controls on alcohol marketing, and reducing the availability of alcohol. So looking at, you know, trading hours and outlet density and other ways to reduce underage access to alcohol.
Okay. Now, in that little package we heard, there were people saying they started drinking, this girl saying she had a first drink when she was 13. Another one said they were 15. What is the average age for people to start drinking? And when we're talking about drinking, even, what does that mean? Because I was reading that 44% of these people who said they had the first drink at 14 or so don't even have a complete drink, don't have a full drink. They just have a sip or something. So what's the average age and what are they drinking and how much are they drinking?
Well, in one of the recent national surveys, one of our best national surveys, we saw that the age that young people start drinking has increased a little bit in the last few years. So in 2013, young people said that they'd started drinking on average at just over 15 and a half years of age. So in 1998, it had been 14.4. So we've seen it go up in some recent years, which is really encouraging to see. The later that young people start drinking, the better in terms of health outcomes. So I think that's really important. There are, as I said, there are fewer young people starting to drink. There's more young people choosing not to drink, which is, again, really encouraging. We're also seeing that in older ages as well. And in terms of what they're drinking the same thing as everybody else. They're drinking beer, some of the premixed sweet spirits that are, targeted at that age group because they're very palatable. They're drinking wine, including cask wine, which is sold at ridiculously cheap prices.
All right. And that's one of the things, isn't it, that the cheaper the alcohol, the more likely it is that someone that age will be drinking it.
Definitely. You make it cheaper, you make it easier for young people to buy.
But the interesting thing about some of these figures, and sometimes you've got to drill down to see if it's really true, but that maybe 10 years ago, 22% or so of young people were having their first drink from their parents. Now it's more like about 10 or 11%. So they're still drinking, still having that first drink, but their parents are not introducing them to it. Why is that?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting and encouraging thing to come out from some of the recent research. Why are parents supplying less alcohol? I think there's a whole range of things going on. I think parents are better informed about the health risks of supplying alcohol. I think there's been a lot more attention on the issue of young people's drinking through the media and through other avenues in recent years. I think some of those messages are getting through. We're learning more and more about the impact of alcohol on the developing brain.
Yeah.
That's a really important message to come through. And I think parents are starting to hear that and they're feeling less pressure to supply alcohol to their children.
Now, one of the other things we often hear is, oh, well, in Italy and France, everyone drinks around the dinner table, the parents introduce it, and because of that, the children don't abuse alcohol. Is that true?
Absolutely not true. It's a really commonly held myth, but it's absolutely flawed, and there's really no evidence to support the idea that Australia should move to a more European style drinking culture. People often use that myth to suggest that children should be introduced to alcohol younger and that Australia's liquor laws should be more relaxed. But this view of the European drinking culture is a really romantic one. I'm not surprised that people like it, but it's just not accurate. So we're seeing that more European countries are trying to tackle the same issues we are. In France, France has a new term. It's called le binge drinking. So they're addressing the same issues we are. Elsewhere in Europe, they call it coma drinking. So these are really not things that we're trying to move towards. We're seeing in some of these European countries, like France, Italy, Spain, they actually have a lot higher rates of chronic disease and road crashes than Australia do. So I don't think we really should be moving towards a more European approach.
Okay. There's a lot we want to talk to you about. I'll read some text messages, which I think are indicative of various types of being introduced to alcohol. Kuda says, my dad gave me my first taste of beer when I was about 14. Maybe that's why I prefer bourbon. I resisted until my son's 18th birthday, mostly since he joined the army the same day. Eric says, I'm trying to remember my first drink was Stone's Green Ginger Wine or Brand of Vino. Remember that? On high school camp before the teachers found it and confiscated it. So I'm sure that was the case as well for a lot of people. What about this one? As a baby, I was given rum in my bottle to make me sleep. As a child, maybe 8, I was given port and lemonade by my mother and grandmother at their weekend sessions. I started independent drinking at 16, but drink very little now. However, Jakey the superhero says, I was 11. My older brother and sister were doing tequila shots with the lemon and salt. They gave me some while my parents watched. I also have vague memories of having sips of my dad's beer before I was 11. The first time I got drunk was about the same time I was stealing Mum's Fruity Elixir. That's one of the most appalling drinks in the world, I hate to say it. Sorry, Fruity Elixir. I've had trouble with alcohol and other drugs my whole life. The last 3 years I've managed to overcome it and really genuinely prefer not to drink. I'm 36. So is there any causal link or any correlation whatsoever between people who start drinking early in their lives, 12, 13, 14, 15, and people who have alcohol problems later on?
Yes, we have seen evidence to suggest that. So the younger people start drinking, the more likely that they're going to have problems later on, so heavier drinking in their young adult and older years. So there is so much evidence to really support young people delaying drinking for as long as possible, and that really links with the expert guidelines for young people, which say that for under 18s, no alcohol is the safest choice, and there is lots of evidence to support that.
Okay. Rodney in Tasmania says, what age group is the youth? As a 25-year-old, I hate the terms young people and the youth. I find it disrespectful. We are not all drunks. Just wrap the young people in bubble wrap. They may learn how to stuff up and learn from their mistakes and live to their fullest. That's all very well, Rodney, but if you're 14, you shouldn't be drinking alcohol because, as Julia has been telling us, it has an effect on the developing brain. That's the same with drugs or anything like that. At that age, you are not helping yourself in any way. And it's a health problem, a major health issue, isn't it, Julia, for someone developing?
Major health issue, major social issue. So we see huge amounts of health harms from alcohol, as well as social issues, which the police could tell you all about, the huge range of social problems that alcohol is involved in.
Okay, and someone else says, remember Alcopop's tax. And that was one way of increasing the price of those products to sort of to make sure that kids or young people, the youth, didn't drink them, but they kind of just moved on to other things. But that's one of the things you're talking about as well, and that is that easily accessibility due to how much something costs, but also if there's a lot of bars, pubs, bottle shops in your area, does that mean you're more likely to drink, and advertising and marketing and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, definitely. All of those factors are really important. You mentioned the Alcopops tax, and I think there's a little bit of a misunderstanding about what impact that had and what our expectations were of that. It was never meant to fix everything, but it was meant to contribute. And so we'd seen there was lots of data around at the time that young people really preferred Alcopops because they were sweet, fruity, they're easy to drink. And there had been changes to the tax, which meant that there was a bit of a loophole and Alcopops were being taxed at a lower rate. And so they addressed that. They changed the tax rate of Alcopops specifically. What we saw from evaluation of that was that young people drank less of the alcopops after that. There was some level of substitution with other spirits and other drinks, but overall, young people consumed less alcohol following that measure. It shows that tax works, but that we need a more comprehensive approach. We need overall reform of alcohol taxation.
Okay. Julia Stafford is our guest from Curtin University. We're talking about young people starting to drink, why we should delay that, if only for health reasons. What about Australia's drinking culture? We hear a lot about that. Is it any worse than other kind of big drinking nations in the world? Are we one of the worst nations in the world? And where does it come from, do you think?
Well, there are lots of big drinking countries. Australia is up there. I mean, we have a drinking culture quite similar and issues quite similar to the UK. You know, we're dealing with a lot of the same issues, you know, in terms of the factors that contribute to alcohol, really cheap, really accessible, no controls on alcohol marketing. And we're seeing a lot of the same problems. You know, some of the Scandinavian countries have similar, really heavy drinking. And so Australia is definitely up there. And our, if I look at, I can look at how much alcohol we've been drinking over, say, the last 50 years in Australia, and it fluctuates. So it goes up and down over the years. And so we're currently in a bit of a downward trend, which is great. But this is dynamic, and you know, we see it fluctuate over time. It doesn't mean that we've solved the problem by any extent.
We will take some calls in a moment, Kevin and Scott, and anyone else who would like to ring. But some really interesting text messages. Start with one from Eden, who says, is there any evidence relating to increasing the legal drinking age like America? And does that minimise early age alcohol use or abuse? So in many American states, it's 21 is the legal drinking age. Does that make any difference?
Well, it does. There is evidence from natural experiments in the US and in Australia where the legal purchase age for alcohol has either gone up or gone down. Where the legal purchase age has gone down, it's been a younger age, we've seen more problems. So there's actually quite clear evidence that when you lower the legal purchase age, there are more alcohol-related road crashes. And particularly in those younger ages. Okay. And where they've increased the legal purchase age, there's been less problems. So there is evidence to support that. It's going to be a tough one, but, you know, perhaps we should be talking about it.
Okay. And also, Chris says, I don't want to start a big debate, but I think if marijuana was legal, more of the drinking issues would disappear. The only pot-related violence I've ever heard of are crime-related, not substance-related. On the health side, alcohol, I believe, has been proven to be worse than pot. What does Julia think of this? And we've got to factor in, of course, you know, the fact that if you make it legal, then a lot more people might be doing it and therefore driving or operating heavy machinery or whatever when affected. But what about what Chris is saying?
Well, I mean, I think it's an interesting point because alcohol is associated with huge amounts of harm to health and social issues. So the fact that it's legal has really no link to how safe it is as a product. If alcohol was invented today, it would never be legal. And I think the fact, you know, what drugs are legal or illegal isn't really associated with how much harm is caused.
But if marijuana was invented today or tobacco as well, it would not be legalised.
Tobacco would certainly never pass the regulators.
Unbelievable.
You know, it's a fact of history.
Yeah. Wine tax is less than spirits and beer because of farm producers' pressure to alter that. I'm sure that probably is the case. Let's take some calls, 1-300-800-222. Tell me about your early experiences or how old you were and how that affected you or maybe how it affected introducing your children to alcohol. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Rod. How are you?
Going very well, Kevin.
I'm sort of interested in the historical perspective, Rod.
Yeah.
You know, like if you look back at the origins of drinking alcohol, you can go back to the Viking era and fermentation of grapes and wheat and barley.
Yeah.
But in more recent times, or well, coming forward, you've got a situation where people actually drank alcohol instinctively because the water was so bad.
Yeah.
They were dying from waterborne diseases.
That's right.
Okay, then you come forward a bit further, and there was a penny dropped in tankards in inns, and if you had a drink on the king, you were press ganged.
Okay. All right. Yes, certainly the gin craze in Britain, in England, that was because people couldn't drink the water. I don't know how appropriate that is to today's discussion, but it's an interesting story, Kevin, and thank you very much for that. Julia, does it go all the way back that far?
Oh, alcohol has been part of history, you know, right from the start. So yeah. No one's doubting that alcohol has been around for a long time. But, you know, the form that it's in today and the extent that alcohol companies, you know, design, market, you know, produce, sell products to increase consumption is really a very different situation.
If young people, teenagers in their mid-teens, were to drink, I know this is going to be tough. You'd prefer them not to drink at all, I'm sure. But is it better that they drink beer, spirits, wine? I mean, is there, you know, are some of these things not as bad as others if you drink responsibly, so to speak?
Well, at the end of the day, alcohol is alcohol. It can, you know, we're talking, it's in different forms, but essentially it's the same drug. So, you can have the same issues. But obviously, some products, there are much higher concentration of alcohol. They're less palatable, but they are a much higher percentage of alcohol. So they are associated with some specific risks. Okay. But as I said, alcohol is alcohol.
All right. Scott, good morning.
Good morning, Rod, and your guests. I've just got a quick one in regards to a lot of medications. Example, cough medications. Yeah. What's the alcohol content in that? Got the same detrimental effect.
That's a very good question, Scott. Julia?
I have absolutely no idea. I'm sorry
about that. But yeah, I mean, I would think though that if you're taking a spoonful of medicine or whatever, the alcohol content is going to be so slight. It has kind of an effect, but it's not a detrimental effect like drinking, you know, half a dozen schooners or whatever. So I would presume that might be the difference. But if a medical doctor would like to help us, we'd love to hear from you. 1-300-800-222. Your comments about alcohol, especially regarding young people or youth in our society. Hello, Andrew.
G'day, Rod. How you going?
Oh, it's nice to hear from you. What's on your mind?
Well, childhood trauma led me to start drinking at 14. I was a full-on alcoholic by 19.
Ooh.
I gave up at 26.
Yep. What made you give up? What happened?
My life had tumbled into a situation where I'd lost everything, and I was coming home from a concert from the Entertainment Centre at Sydney, and I was hit by a drunk driver in my car, and it was a very bad smash. And 2 weeks later, I'd given up drinking, and that was on the 28th of May, 1996. Seven,
right.
Which means in 2 weeks' time I'll be celebrating 19 years of
sobriety.
Fantastic.
Good on you. Who did you see at the entertainment centre, by the way?
Live.
Oh, really?
Live, yeah. The band Live, yeah.
Yeah, from their Throwing Copper years.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It was on the 4th of May, 1997, yeah. And I drove out onto the highway, and I was hit at Crystal Street by a drunk driver. He changed lanes, but I was right beside him because he was drunk, and he pushed me off the road. And unlike in the American movies where the cars go down the road banging into the side of each
that
other,
that didn't happen.
Big car pushes a little car off the road, and a little car smashes into the building.
Gee, that was on Parramatta Road?
On Parramatta Road, yeah. And I was lucky if I was doing 50Ks, so otherwise I probably would have been killed, yeah.
Oh, Andrew, well, I'm certainly glad that you didn't, but...
yeah.
I appreciate you telling us about that, mate. I'll talk to you later. Thank you very much.
Before I go, this is, it's as simple as this.
Yeah.
Alcohol is poison and the body responds accordingly.
Thank you very much. Julia Stafford, would you like to comment on what Andrew was telling us?
Yeah, I think Andrew's raised a really important point about harms to others from alcohol. You know, alcohol affects people other than the drinker. So Andrew was affected by a drink driver. And we see a lot of that. So I think You know, people can make their own decisions about how much they drink, but I think a really important message is that alcohol affects other people, and we see huge amounts of harm to others. You know, road crashes from drink drivers, we see domestic violence, assaults, you know, family breakdowns. So, you know, alcohol affects people far beyond the drinker themselves.
Okay. Just on that, Michael in Malden says, I know pot is bad, but it doesn't bring out the aggression or foolish bravado that alcohol can in some people. We're not saying, oh, you know, skip alcohol, smoke drugs instead or smoke pot instead. I mean, the message here is certainly under the age of 18, don't do either. And beyond that, probably don't do too much of it because your brain is still developing. And that's the key. And also, you don't want people driving around after they've been smoking marijuana, surely.
Definitely. And they're both associated with risks. You know, the risks from alcohol are very well known now, and it's, you know, widely available. I think there are differences between alcohol and some other illicit drugs, but they're, you know, there are risks associated with all of them. And as you say, there are still risks for adults. And nobody should drink too much because everybody is at risk of different harms. And as we age and over time, drinking is more likely to cause some of the chronic issues in terms of your heart health and cancers and liver cirrhosis, things like that. So there are risks for all ages from drinking too much.
We'll get to David, to Owen, Bruce and Colin has just disappeared. 1-300-800-222 is the number. 1-300-800-222. Where are all the ladies? We need some women to call as well and their experiences, especially if they're obviously the experience of young women or girls is going to be different to boys. We'll get to that in a moment. Bruce, good morning.
Oh, hello, Rod.
Yes. You had your first drink at the age of 10.
Yes. I used to go over to the neighbour's place and just before they'd cook up a nice big roast dinner at dinner time, and I'd have a glass of McWilliams semi-sweet sherry with them. So
sweet sherry, eh? Yeah. You really cut loose.
And then when I was about 13 or 14, I used to just have a small beer at home at the dinner table with Dad and a couple of brothers, you know. When I left school and started working and got out into the world and that sort of thing, I used to go out drinking at the clubs and pubs and nightclubs and that sort of thing. But I never really, it never had a great fascination for me, drinking, really. I would get drunk on occasions, but it didn't seem to, I guess in one sense, because it didn't seem to me like sort of forbidden fruit or something.
Yes, that's interesting. Yes, all right, I'll get Julia Stafford, our guest this morning, to comment on that. The whole idea of parents who say to their children, no, you can't do it, don't do it, we're not going to let you, does that have any effect? Is it more likely that they will drink more than if they've got parents who do introduce them to it a little bit?
No, there's no evidence really that introducing children to alcohol at earlier ages leads to safer drinking behaviours. So as I've mentioned before, starting to drink younger ages is associated with more problems later on. So if parents are supplying alcohol, it actually increases rather than decreases how much young people drink. If a parent gives alcohol to their child, not surprisingly, they're going to drink it and they're probably going to want more. And it suggests, it has that implicit message that the parents approve of their drinking. So I think we're learning more about the role of parents, and I think that's changed a little bit. We know more that parents communicating their disapproval of their child's drinking actually does have an impact. Okay. People might think that, you know, the influence of parents reduces over time, but it actually is still really important. So I think parents need to stay strong in the knowledge that they're communicating their disapproval of their child's drinking actually does make a difference.
Okay. David is a licensee. G'day, David.
G'day, Rod. How are you?
Not too bad. What happens at your restaurant?
Well, in Victoria, I'm under the impression, I've just done my liquor licence law
refresher.
Probably 2 years ago. Yeah. Refresher 2 years ago, and we are actually allowed to serve alcohol to a minor if he's accompanied with his parents in our restaurant.
Wow.
I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but it seems...
How often does it happen?
It doesn't happen very often, but we live in a wine area. So, sadly, we don't really know the effects of alcohol in our community. It's not a community where you could stand up and say, I have a problem with this, because it's our livelihood, the whole community.
Yeah,
in this.
Right. That's
Yeah, but we are brought up to respect wine, and we try and match food always with wine, but, you know, obviously, there's an evil side to it as well, which not everyone can cope with.
That's the problem, isn't it? But you know, you don't realise that maybe till you're an adult, because if you're drinking a lot when you're a kid, you can't handle it anyway, can you?
No. Well, we've watered our wine down with soda water, so we always have 20% wine and soda
really?
Water to match food. And we're quizzed about it at the table as well, where it came from, what year, what flavours are in there. But I'm not sure if that's right or wrong. It's just how we've been brought up.
All right, David, thank you very much for that. Julia, I mean, I don't know whether you know all the laws throughout every state, but that's remarkable, isn't it, that it is legal in Victoria, says David, to serve alcohol to children if the parents say yes.
Yeah, so the state liquor licensing laws vary. Each state is slightly different. I'm not across all of the detail, but it sounds like it's highly possible. So that's on-premise, on a licensed premise.
Yeah.
And there are different laws in most states now around in the home, and the provision of alcohol in the home has changed in the last 10 or so years. Victoria and most other states and territories now have what we call secondary supply laws, which filled that gap where it was previously legal for any adult to supply any child with any amount of alcohol. And that was, you know, that had caused some problems and what really wasn't setting the right standard. And so most states have tackled that issue now with secondary supply laws, which vary slightly in each state, but generally say that adults can't provide alcohol to a young people in the home without parental permission, which I think sets some really important community standards.
All right. Owen wants to talk about fetal alcohol saturation disorder. G'day, Owen.
Yeah, hi. I am in a situation where my wife's cousin suffers from this condition, FASD, as its shorthand is. So basically, it's caused by the mother drinking alcohol during pregnancy.
Yep.
In his case, she drank alcohol, literally she was drinking 5 minutes before delivery.
No.
And it causes all sorts of developmental issues, problems with actual social interaction, can cause all sorts of... essentially, just he was born addicted to alcohol, and it's very prevalent within Australia, unfortunately. But nobody's done any proper tests on the rates of it. It's rather...
How prevalent is it, do you think, Owen?
Oh, look, from my experience, it's probably, I would say probably 3 in 10 deliveries.
Oh, okay.
There's issues with it, but they've not done numbers on it.
Yeah.
I know from speaking to people in the maternity ward, they said it happens more often than they would like to see. There's a sort of impression within the wider community that it's an Indigenous problem, which it's not. It's across the country. It's happening. And the other problem that happened in the case that I'm familiar with is this woman was drinking so much she couldn't even breastfeed because that was just providing more alcohol to the system. So I understand why, you know, that we've got alcohol in society. We can't just get rid of it now because it's, you know, prohibition doesn't work. But I do think it would be great if somebody could actually start surveying stuff like this, finding out the rates, working out ways of combating it, and if the government could stop getting funding from these guys.
Yeah. The problem is, of course, is that if you're an alcoholic, and it certainly sounds like...
This woman was, yeah.
Yeah. Then what can you do? I mean, everyone knows that you should not drink when you're pregnant.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's... I agree, if you're alcoholic, it's an issue. But then, you know, that being the case... given enough motivation, like I was a very heavy drinker, You know, I started drinking at 23. I was a very heavy drinker till last year. I'm 30 now. Right. My wife gave birth to a child on the 1st of July last year, and I haven't touched alcohol since.
Right.
So if you've got motivation and you've got the right support around you, you can stop.
All right, Owen, we wish you the very best with that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Julia, so fetal alcohol saturation disorder, that is, if it's 3 in 10, that's a huge concern, isn't it?
Owen was particularly well informed on this issue, and it's a really important one. We, as he said, we don't know the numbers. There haven't been a whole national surveys of this. It's a very complex issue, very complex to diagnose, and there's been a lot of work going on that. The Telethon Kids Institute here in Western Australia has been leading some of those efforts, and you know, it is a huge issue. Alcohol and pregnancy, it's the leading cause of preventable birth defects. So we're talking about fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, FASD. We don't know just how prevalent it is, but as Owen said, it goes across the whole community, and it's an issue for all of us. And yes, there is a lot more knowledge now about the risks of drinking during pregnancy, but still we see almost half of pregnant women drinking during their pregnancy, despite the guidelines that no alcohol during pregnancy is the safest option. The message still hasn't quite reached the whole community. And for people who are well entrenched in the drinking culture and who have been drinking for some years, it can be harder to stop drinking. And so there needs to be really clear messages in the community and through medical doctors, right, and as well as really good support for people who need some extra support to stop drinking.
We've got about 10 minutes left. Try and get to all of our callers, but some of these text messages. Justin says, I'm a classic binge drinker. I love to drink 12 to 15 stubbies on a Friday night. Been doing it for 25 years. Not going to stop now. Someone else says, I live with an alcoholic. It's very sad, the lies. Her life is controlled by alcohol. Doesn't eat. Very sad. Have spoken with my doctor, who says it's 20% of our population. Rob says, I worked as a cocktail bar and wine steward in fine restaurants. I developed a drinking problem. I'm lucky I survived. Now I drink water. The responsible service of alcohol is the best thing to happen, and being sober is great. Indeed, that responsible service of alcohol must really have changed the way it's served in many places. Dave, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm just ringing up to say, I drink now and again. I shouldn't drink. I didn't drink for 15 years, and I started drinking a couple of years ago, like just once a month, once every 2 months or something, and because of different reasons. But I had health problems straight away, actually, as soon as I started again. Like, never had a problem in that whole 15 years. And then as soon as I started again, binge drinking it is, like, I got an ulcer. I started getting a bit of a rash, and they were the only two problems. But I started getting problems straight away, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that if you don't have a problem with alcohol, you could have like 10 bottles of wine around your house. You know, you can just have wine when you want. But if you've got a problem with alcohol, you can't have alcohol around the house, you know.
Yeah.
So I know with my drinking, like, I get a bit frustrated for different things that happen. I used to use that as an excuse, but it used to happen sometimes. Frustrated about noises and things. And I'd go down the bottle shop like 11, 12 o'clock at night, you know. So when the bottle shop shut at 10, well, I only had to worry till 10 o'clock. After 10 o'clock, I was right, you know. Like, it'd be shut, so I wasn't going to go down there. So I think it should be restricted even more. So.
Okay.
If you haven't got a problem with alcohol, you can keep alcohol around the house, you know. Like, they're making big money out of it, and it does have health effects. And it's on a delay. The health effects are on a delay. It might hit you when you're 70 or something.
Yes.
You know, like, it slowly creeps up. You get a bit of a rash, or you have a bit of problem, or it affects your diabetes. And there's a lot of people living on the edge, you know what I mean? They can't. They have to watch out the alcohol. different health problems keeps them in check. Like they've got their diabetes, they're on the verge of diabetes. Oh, I can't be hitting the booze tonight, you know. Yeah. My diabetes has been almost flaring up and giving me problems, or this rash is giving me problems, or, you know, my gout's playing up, you know, I can't drink. So, yeah. You know, like, it has serious health problems that people don't necessarily turn up in statistics, they're all quietly living with their little health problems, you know.
All right, Dave, thank you so much for making that so clear to us. And Judy doesn't want to make the same point, but wants to make a similar point in that it all depends, doesn't it? G'day, Judy.
Good evening. Thank you for your program.
Thank you.
I'm calling, as I have responsible serving of alcohol,
yeah.
I'd say what my mum taught us was close to responsible consumption of alcohol.
Right.
Where from our mid to late teens, we would be allowed to have firstly a little sip of wine and then maybe a half a glass and then a glass of wine on special occasions. So we were taught to savour a fine wine, and that wine and alcohol could be used to add to the ambience and enjoyment of a special occasion. And by not allowing young people to experience alcohol, it gained a fascination, and often when they turned 18, they wanted to rush out, and the first thing they wanted to do was have a drink.
Yeah.
And I particularly saw this when I was an exchange student to the Deep South and lived in a dry county and saw young people having these very clandestine trips across the state line into Louisiana to buy alcohol and then guzzling down, you know, bourbon and you know, fortified drinks. And so there it was all about the it being illicit and drinking in quantity and, you know, completely different to being responsible and being able to enjoy it.
Okay.
So I'm now almost 60 and I can go to social occasions and enjoy wine, but I'm in control. And I think that would be lovely if that's what we could all aim for and achieve. But
it would be lovely,
preventing young people from experiencing alcohol and not teaching them about it and how to handle it.
All right. Good point, Judy, and thank you very much. Julia Stafford is with us from Curtin University. So a couple of different views there, although it's about if you have that propensity for alcoholism, we know it's a disease. If you suffer from it, in the end, if you start taking that drink, it's going to affect you. If you don't suffer from it, you can drink all you like, and it's not really going to affect you except maybe, you know, in the long term health wise. It's not going to grip you like if you're an alcoholic.
Well, it really depends what kinds of harms you're talking about. If you're talking about people with serious alcohol dependence, that is really the pointy end of the spectrum, where we talk about most of the harms from alcohol are not really, we're not talking about the really pointy end people with serious alcohol dependence. We're talking about the huge number of people who occasionally drink too much, you know, binge drinking, where they occasionally drink too much, or they are drinking quite a bit over a long period of time, and that's contributing to the chronic health problems. I think, you know, we're not just talking about alcoholics and people with serious alcohol dependence. We're talking about the huge amount of harms that are caused by the vast majority of people who occasionally drink too much.
Okay. Let's just get to two more calls. Ken, good morning.
Good morning, Rod. I believe if you wish to restrict the amount of alcohol consumed by people, make it enforceable, then you need to make something as simple as driving a car, you are in control of a vehicle or any vehicle, any heavy machinery at all, your blood alcohol has to be zero.
Right, for everybody.
Everybody. And that means basically that if you have a drink 24 hours before you're driving, you are in trouble with the law. It will severely make people think about drinking and, you know, when they drink and how much they drink. And
all right. Okay, Ken. Julia, I mean, one of the things that really changed drinking behaviour in Australia was random breath testing and 0.05. What if it was zero? Would that make any difference?
Well, not sure. There are some people who are talking about that. I think if we stick to what the evidence says works, we need really, really good investment in random breath testing and in the education campaigns around road safety and preventing drink driving. I think let's talk about what the right blood alcohol concentration is, but I think our road safety strategies have been some of the best in the world and really have changed our drinking culture.
Okay, Diesel's our last call, and we've only got about a minute. Diesel, you wanted to make a point that drinking habits of young people have changed.
Oh, very much. I remember when me, maybe even you, go to a party, you'd take half a dozen cans with you.
Yep.
And at the end of the night, you'd leave the place, you've left two cans there.
Right.
I've got two boys, and when they go out, they'll take their alcohol with them.
Yeah.
They will not leave that party until they've got rid of whatever they've taken.
That is a problem, is it? Are young people drinking more now, Julia, than before, than 20, 30, 40 years ago?
If you look at more recent times, the data shows that they're drinking a little bit less. So I think a lot of things have changed. It's hard to compare with 40 years ago, how we buy our alcohol, what we drink, social media, the internet, everything has changed so much. It's really hard to compare.
Okay.
We've still got a big problem and need to do something about it.
We will have to leave it there. Julia Stafford from the McCusker Centre for Action on Alcohol and Youth at Curtin University, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you so much, Rod.
Well, that's another podcast from ABC Local Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Thanks for listening.